So here we are in the solstice. The first day of winter. I like to keep tabs on these things because it helps me feel connected to the natural forces of life. They seem to go on eternally, no matter what we do to the planet. And it's wonderful to be here in the middle of the Christmas, New Year's gulch, taking refuge. And I myself always delight in being able to be still and be quiet in a group of people like us, with the support of the genuine, soulful search for our inner being, away from the noise, away from all the push-pull of everyday life, to take refuge into silence. Just feels so great. In Asia, the idea is to take refuge from the intense heat by going into the shade. In our case, we take refuge from the intense heat of social hyperactivity and all the push and pulls involved in being part of society that make us heat up until at some point or other we feel our hair is on fire, trying to be everything that we hoped we could be, trying to manifest everything that people around us are expecting. Always reaching for perfection. Even when we sleep, we feel restless and worried and agitated. Even though, if you really deeply look into this moment, this breath, everything is perfectly fine. So why the agitation? Why the restlessness and stress and constant worry? I was having a very, very peaceful meditation for quite some period. And then all of a sudden this worry just pops up, you know, like the SpaceX satellite. Boom. May have parked my car on Julian Street illegally. So I thought, well, wait a minute. It used to be that I could park there for $10. They opened up the bank parking lot. And now that whole place is closed and fenced up. So why would it be illegal to park at the fence there? No cars are going in and out of the parking area. Am I going to walk out here and have a car that's been taken off to the police department garage? And then in the vastness of the space that I had achieved through this quiet practice, I realized, I can just let that go. It's just a worry. Might be true, it might come to pass, it might not. Can't do anything about it. Just sit here. And easefulness returned. So I feel that what pulls us into this room every week and into practice, wherever we do it, however we find it, is an inner instinctive understanding that fundamentally everything is okay. We just need to get to the place where we can experience that. That integration, that peacefulness of well-being. That is the shade in the middle of the fire of the world. And so we take refuge. It's a good thing to do, especially since an old year is ending, a new year is beginning. And if we give ourselves over to the way that we divide time, which is based on the natural forces, the planets and how they revolve around the sun, it's limited in terms of the whole universe, but it's a powerful view. And like I said, one that we cannot impact. It's more powerful than us. It's nice to know that there are some things like that. It's a good time to launch into the new with a sense of spaciousness and emptiness inside. That's where energy arises naturally from there, joy, a sense of seeing clearly, being wise, having perspective, and being able to choose simply and wisely who we want to be and how we want to engage in this state we call being alive. Interestingly, we as a species have created times during the year when we take those kinds of questions more seriously than the rest of the time. Birthdays, deaths, births, holidays, and there's no time for it as great as the new year. The whole time of resolution, resolving to be, to just be, to just be. Nothing to become, nothing to achieve, maybe resolving to become more empty. You know, in Buddhism, this journey that we take that we call our lifetime, in the Buddhist text is described as going from one shore to the other shore. Whatever the other shore is, whether it's liberation, death, rebirth, getting married, whatever it is, we are in transit. And what is giving us this opportunity to be in transit is the boat. And traditionally in Buddhism, the boat is the Dharma, the truth that the Buddha taught, the nature of existence, the fruits of practice, the benefit of finding like-minded people to practice with. And when I sometimes give talks about emptiness, I think of that boat. What helps that boat carry us from one shore to the other is its emptiness. Our filling ourselves up with hopes, aspirations, the desires, the strivings, create high waves of emotions. They don't like me, they do like me, I did make it, I got fired, I got the job, she will get marry me, she won't marry me, I'm okay, I'm not okay. High waves of emotions arise from striving that threaten to fill the boat. And I sometimes feel that our practice is to get the pail and bail the boat out as often as those waves pour in. Just keep bailing. Just bail. Oh, that emotion. Bail it out. Because otherwise, we're going to drown before we get to the other shore. So maybe one of the resolutions we might think of taking on in a light kind of a way, of course, is that we will keep bailing the emotional the strong, feelingful attacks that arise around us, between us and our closest friends, between us and our family, between us and our neighbors, between us and the person that happens to be sitting next to us in public transit, the person who is driving on the lane beside us on Highway 101. All these emotions that arise as the nature of relationship brings them to us. Instead of resonating with them and believing that they have some force, some positive, liberating function, maybe we can just bail them out of the boat. And the boat gets light, it gets buoyant, and the journey becomes ever so much pleasant, ever so much easier. I'm not sure I've got that much more to say. But since we're a smaller group tonight, it would be a great opportunity to have a group conversation and share the wisdom, share the questions, share whatever it is that is in our hearts and in our minds and as a gift to each other. Take the risk. Just speak up. This is your moment.
I love the process of trying to be present in just the moment. And I find that to be the most difficult thing in the world. Every day, just taking a breath and being present. And trying to drop my anger, my fear, my frustration. So when you say to empty yourself, it's true. It's truly true, but it's the hardest thing for you to do.
Yeah, it's there's an acknowledgement and there's an insight and there's wisdom that you're expressing because you have such an intimate understanding of your process. And that intimate understanding is the wisdom is the insight, right? And I like to say, when we arrive at that place of being present, even for just a flash of a moment, and we appreciate it, and it's so comforting, if we can recognize the feeling in our mind, in our hearts, and in our body, that's called recognition. And the more we recognize, the more we acknowledge, this is how it feels, the more we install it as something that we can recognize when it's just hovering in our inner being, or reminding ourselves that we have this as a refuge when we're in the middle of an emotional firestorm. So it's not about holding any state steady. There's no such thing as a steady state, But there is the understanding that there's always an opportunity for refuge. And remembering that, that's the help.
That's where I get tripped up. I want the constant
state. Constant state, that's that some people call that death, So I'm not sure that that's what you want. There's nothing steady. That's the essence of what the Buddha taught. Everything is in a constant state. And it's terrifying to us because we would like to lean back and know that there's something that we can always count on, that will always support who we think we are and how we think reality should be. Right? And so so much of our efforting and our striving is to put those things into place so that we're convinced that we have arrived, we have a steady state, we know we're secure, we know what's going to happen in the next hour, the next year, the next lifetime maybe. You know, we want to know. We want to be sure. And so the effort of pulling back and loosening those ropes is what we do when we meditate. That's the work. Because that makes us rigid, it makes us tight, it makes our minds small, it really withers our hearts. And so when we let go and understand that everything is really transient, there's nothing that we can really stand on and say, this is firm, other than that there is going to be a breath arising and a breath passing away. That's pretty firm. That we can count on until the last one. But other than that, there's nothing. And in that, we experience our vulnerability, right? That means, we all like to say, you know, we'd like to be like little sausages. Our skin is our container. Your skin is your container. We engage in life in certain ways. And we have limited influence on each other. Whereas I was listening to one of Howie's talks on iTunes the other evening, and it's really true. We are totally connected. We breathe the same air. We have the same internal organs that function to keep this body alive. Our senses operate very, very similarly. There are minor details of differences, but for the most part, we influence each other, we're connected with each other. There's no real strident individuality, except for the one that we go to war to defend. And the sooner that we can understand that and begin to become easeful and comfortable in this vulnerability. The more, the happier we will be, the more relaxed we will be, the more available to ourselves and to each other we will be, and the more compassion will arise because we realize what we feel, everybody feels. What we suffer with, everybody suffers with. What gives us joy, gives everyone joy. And when we sink deeper and deeper into that as a profound understanding, we will naturally live in the heart of compassion that the Dalai Lama always talks about, that everybody's always talking about at this point. It's hard to avoid the word compassion, but what does it really mean? It means to acknowledge our absolute similarity and connectedness with each other, whoever we are, wherever we go, whatever species even we relate to. And speaking of species, here we are on a planet that is maybe going through another phase of extinction. And we are the little bugs, the detritus that lives on this planet. We are an extension of the planet. The planet really is our mother. We really are made of the material that the planet is made of. The more we can identify with this, the sooner we will change our behavior to preserve the balance on this planet, which is so off kilter right now, as was finally recognized in Paris. So this is something that we do as individuals, and the more that we do it as individuals, the more we resonate with it with everyone around us, We don't do it for ourselves. We do it for everyone, for everything. Being compassionate, being in a state of inner balance with the vulnerability of instability, being comfortable with that. Constant change. Anicca. Nothing is steady. If you think about it, life would be kind of boring if it were that predictable. So, in a way, you could say emptiness is the most absolute way of being available for insubstantiality and change, constant renewing, constant shifting, constant change. Yeah. You mean how to practice with powerful emotions? Doubt. When you say doubt, what is it that you're doubting? That it will work. Well, you know, everything in the tradition of Vipassana mindfulness practice leads us to say, don't believe it until you experience it. And that is the answer to doubt. You know, you are your own manifester of what is true in this moment. I mean, the next moment can be different. So if you're in a place of doubting, you have to kind of touch base with, well, what is true for me now? The only way to eradicate doubt is based on your own experience. Doubt is something that applies when you're in the world of faith, you know? But there's nothing in mindfulness practice that relies on faith. So if you've been practicing and you feel the benefits of practice, that's your evidence. That's evidence-based benefits. Doesn't mean that they're always consistently going to be there. But not knowing and not experiencing consistency, not being able to lean on the idea that every time I do this, this will be what happens. Then you realize, oh my God, maybe this process doesn't really work. And then that's the arising of doubt. Then why should I do it? I want something that's consistent, guaranteed, you know. But there is no such thing. So the only way to eradicate doubt is to say, okay, let's try it on this moment. Just three breaths. Just three moments. Do I feel better? Do I feel more relaxed? Do I feel more easeful and more in touch? Yes. It's so simple. I think the doubt arises primarily because this practice is so simple. It's almost too simple. I like it being simple because my sense is it's so fundamental that it's uncorruptible. Everything else that philosophy and religion and spiritual dimensions talk about, they can be questioned. Doubt can enter into that realm and say, really? Can you prove it? You know? No, you're supposed to experience it on faith. Or this very, very wise, enlightened person said so. or this great manuscript described it. But here we are in a place where the only thing is just the practice, being here with this breath in this moment. That's the only thing that any of us preach, if we preach. And then you are in your own research little project of deciding, what is the effect? How does it help me feel? Because that's indubitable, right? You can't deny it. It's your own experience in the immediate moment. You can embellish it. You can tell yourself stories about it. But they're kind of like, you know, flesh on the bone. They're corruptible. But the practice is too simple to corrupt. And therefore, it is a great witness to the extinction of doubt. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah.
I found the imagery of the boat on shore, you know, open dharma and waves, bikini buckets.
Where your shoulders are.
where your shoulders are, you know? Oh. I've just been noticing my shoulders go up and down. Sometimes I strive when I'm up here, and sometimes I relax. But it's, you know, you can understand it. Yeah, there is. I mean, in the Buddhist written texts, there is the idea of called right effort, or what's called wise. I like to call it wise effort, because right's a strange word for me. It's the opposite of wrong, you know. Wise kind of goes beyond that dichotomy. And not too much and not too little. So every time that you're in the Buddhist realm, what you're doing is being encouraged to go to the center. Avoid the extremes, avoid the polarities, you know, move towards the center. So even effort is something that one wants to have in balance. And so I jokingly say, and you know when you're in balance, when your shoulders aren't up around your ears. So, and the body, you know, the body is a great thermometer for what's going on and how much effort are we really, you know, is our shoulder to the grindstone kind of a thing, you know. You can tell because every time that an emotion arises or efforting arises, the breathing might get shallow, you know? Breathing is always responding to our state. We have a thought, we see something, our breathing responds to it. So when we're in balanced or wise effort, our breathing is nice and deep and steady, and there's not a lot of chatter in the mind. So it's like anything else. You know, when it's in a state of balance and moving towards the center instead of being extreme, then the body is relaxed and the mind is quiet. And there's a sense of enjoyment instead of having a heavy brow, you know? So the body is a great indicator of whether we're in the extreme states or whether we're in the center, you know. Buddhism is called the middle path for that reason. Okay. Yeah. You have no desires. Wow. Congratulations. And yet you move, you talk, you wake up in the morning. People wonder, if I have no desires, Will I want to do anything? Yeah.
And no drive.
And no drive. Okay.
No discipline.
Okay. So that's a little bit on the extreme side, right? It's a little too relaxed.
I don't like it. I just get all these messages that something's wrong with me.
You get all these messages?
That something is wrong with you.
From, you get these messages from?
From society, from friends, from people outside of me.
Okay. Oh, but it doesn't disturb you. It just disturbs the people around you.
Because
they have judgments and views of your worth. So that's where you care. That's where you care. Hey, we found a care. All right. We found one. Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe they're just jealous. They're envious. How can you be so relaxed? You're not achieving anything. You don't have any drive. And here we are going crazy, trying to, you know, become more and better and bigger and richer and wilder and have 3 houses and, you know, and all that stuff. And you're just being yourself moment to moment at ease. Wow. We're jealous. We're envious. We're going to burn out long before you do. Wait, the pain of what?
Of seeing the inequities.
Seeing the inequities, yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay, okay. So that's the pain of empathy, of feeling other people's experience. You know, I feel it. There was a on Huffington Post today, there was an image of thousands and thousands and thousands of refugees. I mean, there was just, it looked like a river of them going off into the distance, and cops in front being stopped, you know. And, you know, that affects me deeply, and it's not having a home, not having peace, not having a place that you can lay down comfortably. And, you know, there's a lot of tragedy and pain in the world. And I think that what we can do is not turn our attention away and realize that their suffering is our suffering, like somebody's joy is our joy. And, you know, wanting to do something about it, that begins to be the striving, you know. There are lots of, you know, there are lots of agencies, there's lots of groups that help, and sometimes we're moved towards them and sometimes we're not. But I think the main thing is not averting our gaze from suffering, realizing that the suffering is our suffering as well. Not say, oh my God, that's terrible, I don't want to look at it, you know, go away, it's not me, it's not my life. But open up to it and feel it. And maybe in that small way, we are making a contribution to liberation of all beings. Who knows? I know we're, in a way, you know, we're so out of balance. There was a great movie a lot of years ago called Koyaanisqatsu, which translated into World Out of Balance. And that came out in the late 60s, and I think, wow, here we are, and we're even more out of balance. Crazy, crazy, crazy. And, you know, worlds out of balance create great teams of migrations. Not only human species, but all species have their vital grounds of survival reduced or taken away completely. And in that chaos arises a lot of fear. And then in that fear arises a lot of extremism, right? I'm thinking of right extremism. Fascism, even. We're at the brink of that. And I know that we feel it. We feel it. And so we cannot close ourselves off to what is unfolding. We might disagree with it, we might think we're better than it, or we might militate against it, but the fact is to just experience it deeply, and then motivation will arise from wisdom as opposed to striving. The whole nonviolent movement was inspired by that thought, you know. But we are, you know, the depletion of resources and the imbalance of this planet is creating all this migration and all this chaos and confusion and violence and terrorism. And the fear that arises drives us towards politically to the right. And to the extreme right is very dangerous. And so we want to be mindful of that in this country right now. And I know that you all know what I mean and who I mean. And you know, it's frightening. I'm the daughter of Holocaust survivors. So, you know, it happens. It comes up. So to have open eyes, open heart, receptive body, be in the moment, be awake, and the right actions will arise naturally at the right time. Okay. So let's just sit for a little bit on that thought. So may we dedicate ourselves in a balanced way to the heart of peace and compassion, which we have already diligently cultivated, or we wouldn't be here right now. With a fervent wish that all beings may be happy and avoid the causes and conditions of ravages and homelessness and the deepest sorrows of suffering. And may we wish that all beings enjoy the conditions of ease, peacefulness, wisdom, gentleness and compassion towards each other and all species. And may we dedicate ourselves to this every morning and throughout the day and every evening and even in our sleep, the intention to see a world where beings can experience the joy and the profound fulfillment, which is unconditioned and therefore infinite. I just have one announcement before I let you go. I'm going to be here next week, and I've left some flyers on the back table about a retreat in Costa Rica that I'm leading with Rick Center, January 23rd to the 29th of this year, this coming year, 2016. It's designed to be a meditation practicing in the middle of the rainforest in an eco-retreat center, where we will explore our union with all natural factors day by day, and we will go out into the wilderness of the rainforest. As you know, Costa Rica, as you might know, was one of the countries in Central and South America where the indigenous people did not populate extensively, so the rainforest is kept almost pristine. And when Oscar Arias became president of Costa Rica, he took all the money away from the military, demilitarized the whole country, and directed it towards health and education and ecological preservation of the rainforest. And for that, he won a Nobel Peace Prize. So I feel, even though I've never been across the border, I'm excited to explore this place of natural, balanced preservation, and I'm very interested in meeting up with a few spider monkeys. And maybe I'll see you there too. So the flyers are on the back table. Thank you very much.
I would. Yes.